Thank you for the introduction, and thank you all for being here today to listen to my talk. As he said, I'm going to be discussing brown stink bug management thresholds in both seedling and reproductive field corn. I'll change things up a little bit from the cotton here. So just to give you an introduction to the insect that we're talking about, it's the brown stink bug Euschistus cervus. This is the adult on the top here and a third instar on the bottom, both of which can be found in your corn throughout the growing season. It's native to the southeastern United States, and in Virginia, where this work has been occurring, it produces at least two generations a year, the second of which can overwinter in crop residue, leaves, or woodlands. And in Virginia, oftentimes many crops are planted in close proximity to each other, and agronomic practices favoring minimal tillage and in close proximity to woodlands allow a lot of overwintering material for the adults and create perennial populations. And its previous research has shown that it can cause both seedling and reproductive injury to field corn. So I've mentioned that it's a native pest, and we also know that it causes this type of injury in field corn. So the question is, why is it relevant to do this study now? And the answer is agronomic practices, as I've discussed before, and decreased use of broad-spectrum pesticides have led to increasing populations of this insect year after year, especially in our corn in Virginia. So to introduce corn development, we have two major periods of time in our corn development that we're concerned about stink bug infestation, the first of which being our very early vegetative stage corn, specifically from emergence to V6, and V6 is defined by six open leaves on the corn plant, and these are going to be our susceptible seedling stages for stink bug infestation. After V6, you're generally safe from vegetative damage from stink bug feeding until you reach the late vegetative stages and early reproductive stages of corn development. This is when your grain is developing and the ear is filling in. And these are susceptible reproductive stages where mechanical damage from stink bug feeding could affect your grain yields. As well as beyond R1, when mechanical damage from stink bug feeding may no longer be an issue for your grain yields, stink bug feeding can introduce grain quality concerns that may persist through R3. So to look at what our early season damage looks like in our Virginia corn, here you may be able to see where this red arrow is pointing to. There's actually a brown stink bug there feeding directly on the growth point of corn. In this case, this field is minimal tillage, which may have provided overwintering material for a large population of these stink bugs in the early corn, as well as caused a malfunction in the planter where the seed slot has remained open and allowed access for this stink bug to feed on a portion of the plant that would normally be protected by the soil. And when this type of feeding occurs, you get this necrotic tissue directly on the growth point of your corn. All of the future tissue from the corn is going to extend from this region, so this kind of mechanical injury can cause some pretty severe growth deformities moving forward. Here's another example of a stink bug in the red circle with the arrow feeding directly on the growth point. In this case, this field has been tilled and the seed slot is closed, but the stink bug still is able to burrow down and feed directly on the portion of the plant where most of your tissue is going to extend from later on in the season. So this type of feeding causes growth deformities, and that can manifest itself in a number of ways, one of which being this type of tillering where you have multiple shoots extending from the same root system, decreasing the overall vigor of this plant. This type of leaf injury is characteristic of stink bug feeding, with window pane damage across the leaf. And if that becomes severe enough, then tops of leaves can fall off and you lose photosynthetic activity as well as decrease the vigor of these plants as well. And a combination of severe versions of all of this type of deformity early on can lead to severely deformed plants late in the season. And this plant here, in this example, won't develop an ear of corn, which is our marketable portion of the plant. The second period of time that we're discussing is our reproductive corn. And I mentioned in Virginia, oftentimes crops are planted in close proximity to each other. Here we have a picture where winter wheat has been planted right next to corn, and the stink bug can overwinter in there and reproduce its first generation in the spring. Then when the wheat is harvested, it often coincides with the early reproductive stages of corn. So the wheat is harvested and adult and nymph stink bugs move directly into the corn just at the time that it would be most susceptible to reproductive injury. So this is an example of a spray trial that was conducted in Tidewater where my research was conducted. The treated plots on the left here were treated between VT and R2 weekly with bifenthrin. And as you can see in the control plots where stink bug infestations were as high as 80 to 100%, there are banana-shaped ears with aborted kernels, and many of the kernels are discolored that did form. And our third piece of the puzzle here that we're concerned about is grain quality reduction from stink bug feeding in reproductive stages and beyond that. Specifically, in this case, we're going to discuss a Fusarium species of fungi, which is an opportunistic fungi, so meaning it's readily available in the environment. However, it needs some sort of mechanical damage, in this case, stink bug feeding, for these spores to be introduced into the kernels of the corn and start developing. And in turn, the Fusarium develops fumonisin contamination, which can be a detriment for grain feed. And in Virginia, much of the corn that we're producing for grain is being used for animal feed. So knowing that we have all these different types of damage and wanting to have informed decisions for Virginia growers on if they should be concerned about stink bug infestations, the timing at which they should be concerned about it, and the levels that would require treatment, we have a few objectives. The first being what level of seedling infestation will affect both your early growth and then your grain yield in turn. Our second objective is what level of reproductive infestation will affect our grain yields. And our third objective is how grain quality is affected by infestation during reproductive stages. And I'll just go into a little bit of preliminary data for this third objective. So for our seedling threshold, we can find different rates of stink bugs to plants for 1 week at stage V2, which if you'll remember is two open leaves on the plant about 14 days after planting. And this is what that looks like. Each one of these cages was over three corn plants, and we can find different rates of stink bugs to each one. Our treatments were as follows. We had a control of zero bugs for the cage, one, two, and three. And I'll talk about infestation levels throughout this talk. And here we have one bug for three plants being 33% infestation. And currently in other states, they've recommended that you would treat your seedling corn at about 11% infestation, which is between our control and our first treatment here. When we removed these cages, we measured the leaf height to get an idea of how our early growth was affected by the stink bug feeding. And then once these plants reached maturity, we harvested all of the ears that were from treated plants and assessed the yield. So here we have our mean extended leaf height on the y-axis and our infestation levels on the x, using a linear mixed effect model where our treatment was our fixed effect and cage and block were random effects. We found no significant difference between the mean extended leaf height between our treatments, meaning that our early growth was not significantly affected by as high as one bug per plant. And in turn, it makes sense if we had no damage early on in the season, we likely won't see a decrease in our yield, and that was the case here. We also had no significant difference in our yield as a function of bushels per hectare across our treatments. So moving into our reproductive threshold, we had a similar setup as our first experiment. We can find different rates of stink bugs to developing ears of corn at stage R1. And our rates for this experiment were 0, 1, 2, and 3 bugs. But instead of being across three plants, they were on one single developing ear of corn. And this sort of mirrors what the infestation levels you would see in the field look like. As I mentioned earlier, wheat is often planted in close proximity to corn, creating higher populations during reproductive stages of corn than you would see in seedling. And once we remove these cages and the plants reach maturity, we assess the yield for each treated ear. And again, we saw no significant difference between our treatments. Bushels per hectare on the y-axis was our estimation of yields, meaning that up to three bugs per plant is likely not going to be a concern for growers in Virginia during stage R1. And for our final experiment, we had three factors in this experiment, one being the presence of a brown stink bug, and if it was there, it was two bugs. The second being the presence of a Fusarium verticulloides inoculation of 1.6 million spores. And the third factor we tested here was growth stage. If you remember, R1 is thought to be within our susceptible reproductive stages, and R2 and R3 should be out of the danger zone for mechanical damage, but these grain quality issues could still be introduced beyond R1. and these treatments were confined to each growth stage for 1 week. So what I'm presenting here is fumonisin contamination, which is the byproduct of the Fusarium fungi developing in the ears of corn. So fumonisin contamination in parts per million is on the y-axis, and our treatments are on the x. And you can see there's a significant difference between our control and brown stink bug only in this trial, meaning that brown stink bug feeding alone without the presence of our Fusarium inoculation can introduce these quality concerns, which kind of reinforces the fact that this Fusarium may be just ubiquitous in the field and all it needs is some sort of mechanical injury to be introduced into the developing ear. But then when we introduce a Fusarium inoculation as well as the brown stink bug, you see it further increased in the fumonisin contamination as high as 25 parts per million. So just for reference, the FDA, I think, recommends 10 to 15 parts per million of fumonisin contamination for swine and cattle feed, respectively. So just brown stink bug alone is going to exceed that. And then when you have a large amount of Fusarium in the field, for instance, in a year with a lot of drought stress, that may be the case, you have far beyond the amount that you would be able to sell the grain from this corn. So in conclusion, we found that seedling thresholds can exceed one bug per plant at stage V2. Reproductive thresholds can exceed three bugs per plant at stage R1. However, stink bug feeding can introduce these grain quality concerns at stages R1 through R3. So you may not be concerned about mechanical feeding at R1. However, moving forward, you may be concerned about stink bug infestations in the field introducing these types of quality concerns when you harvest. So with that, I'd like to thank some of my committee members, Dr. Aaron Gross, Dr. Sally Taylor, and Dr. Roger Church, Dr. Sean Malone for all his help with this research, the Virginia Corn Board for the funding, and all of the students, staff, and faculty at our Tidewater Research Station where all this has been done. And I would be happy to take any questions. Yes. Yeah, so that's a good question. He asked what kind of mortality we had in the cages. So all of the bugs that we applied to our treatments were field collected. And later on in the season, we started going back and replacing them daily as we lost them. So, I mean, it really varies depending on where we collected them from the fields and at what point they were in their development, which is, it's sort of hard for us to monitor that when we're collecting them from the fields. Yes.
It may sound like a pretty good question, but did you notice a difference in the rate of plant growth when the plant were covered with that textile versus not? We've been looking at textile structure when you cover plants, and we find when you cover a plant with textile, it grows much faster for some reason.
Yeah, so the question is if there was any difference between the plants that are covered in those mesh cages and non-covered. We didn't look specifically at that. I think that's something that we'll add to these experiments in the future where we have untreated plants just next to the ones that we see and see if there's a significant difference between the growth, like you're saying. But I don't have that data specifically for this. It's a good question, though.
Any more questions for Tim?
Thank you.